Millions of people are going to go nuts following people in their pajamas trying to hit each other and throw a ball across the field. So we want to talk about what to do this Sunday. And a lot of people, I'm sure, are listening. It's a well-known sikha. But as with everything else in this yeshiva, it's a learning opportunity. It's not just what to do and what not to do, Rebbe told you, because you'll be here for a year, 2 years, maybe longer, but to learn how to make decisions on your own, and this is a biggie. So we're going to talk not about the Super Bowl 2023, we're going to talk about sports and sports obsession. And then I'll give you some guidance about how that translates into what to do this year. And then we'll talk a little bit about what the stakes are. Kapish? Sounds good. Okay, we're not here in this yeshiva to tell you not to watch sports. It's fun, it's entertaining, it's a diversion. Question is how you watch. And I know you guys are just fresh off the boat. Some of this may seem like a little abrasive to you, but hopefully over the course of a couple of months, I'll say, you know what, that makes sense. So may found a little bit abrasive on February 8th, but for some of the boys that have been here since August 8th, yeah, it makes a little sense. What are the three things we want to be careful about when we're watching sports? Okay? Number one is identification. Number two is obsession. Number three is autonomy. So let's think about all those three things when we're watching sports. Number one, oh my goodness, these people are so impressive. Thousands of people are clapping for them. The entire stadium gets up and screams. And then you start to identify with them. And you know, shouldn't be identifying with them. I mean, there are some values here or there. I was going to deny teamwork and hard work, but beyond those surface values, what are the values you want to identify? The values of Judaism, the values of religion, and religion is not a peripheral part of your identity. Hopefully you'll realize. Right? You ask me, what's the goal of yeshiva? Is to take religion from the back burner and put it on the front burner. I know you're all religious, but ask yourself, are you passionate about religion? It's the most important part. When I interview boys, one of the terms I don't like hearing, I'm starting to interview, is, and my Judaics and my Jewish identity, it's not, you're a Jew, you're an Oved Hashem. You have other parts of your life, that's fine, but there's also things, your identity, your Jewish identity, or your religious identity, your religious studies. It creeps me out when I hear that. Like, what am I if not an Oved Hashem? What am I if not a Jew who wants to find a Kodesh Baruch Hu and build a relationship with a Kodesh Baruch Hu? So you start to identify with them and admire them, and then there's a slow culture creep because you start to identify with their world, or you identify with this world. And a lot of the boys here know that we've talked about this before, how agitated I get when I see people wearing sports shirts or sports attire with the name of their sports heroes. Like, why in the world would you want to put someone else's name on your back? Because you want to be that person. You want to be associated with that person. Why in the world would you want to be associated with them? Put the Vilna Gaon on your back. Put Soloveitchik on the back. Put people who you deeply, deeply live with and identify with, and to walk around, to wear a shirt. So the first question is how, and I always give this question, let's say, okay, I'm speaking in an American tone, but you can translate it to South African, Australian. Let's say, put it to a nice South African tone. Let's say the chief rabbi walked in right next to your favorite sports star or an international star. Who would you be more excited to meet? Who would you run after first? Well, be honest with yourself. Don't answer that question, but let that question toss around. I know the answer is probably now. But let that question toss around in your mind. Would you like to? If I gave you a pill and you took that pill and then all of a sudden you were just so deeply identified with the Rosh Yeshiva, or the Tzaddik, or the person who represents all the values you're trying to internalize. Wouldn't that be the why? Wouldn't that be the right answer? Wouldn't the right answer to be, like, what do I care if that sports star is walking in the room? I enjoy watching. I pay money to watch. Just like I pay money for a movie, pay money for a trip, pay money for any other diversion. I don't identify with the pilot. I don't identify with the... They're just entertaining. Rosh Hashanah, identify with entertainment. We've built this culture of hero worship, and of celebrity, and of swag, and of... And then you start to lose your own identity. And by the way, it's not just a sports thing. It's true about culture in general. You watch programs, you get deeply, deeply entrenched in the programs and the culture, you start to take on their mannerisms, their way of speaking, their sarcasm, their cynicism sometimes. Tell people all the time, you can't just apply the pornography curse filter to the movies and television and internet that you consume. It can't just be, is it a movie that's clean without cursing? You also have to ask yourself, what are the values of that movie or series? And if you watch something long enough and there are poor values being displayed, even if there are no curses, and even if there's no gratuitous sex, you'll start to pick up those values. And in America, there's all the rage 20 years ago. Everyone discovered 20, 30 years ago, Seinfeld. It's the worst show possible. Every other line is making fun of someone, making fun of their body image, not working, trying to get away, deceitful, taking advantage, exploitative. Nothing there is positive. Nothing there is healthy. You're not looking at healthy values along this way. So you watch, you watch, you watch, you become part of those values. If anything, part of me wants to say that if you had a choice to go see a movie with good, healthy, black and white values, people of virtue, people of heroism, people of courage, people of whatever, they're not going to make a movie about Lamdanim yet. Mashiach say they will. But whatever, bless. And there's a curse word here or there, it's probably better to watch that movie than to go to a clean movie of cynicism and sarcasm and making fun of people. And because the curse, unfortunately, our world is full of curses. It doesn't even mean anything. The world is just cursed. Like, it's just poor vocabulary. So you hear a curse word, goes in one, it goes up the other. Oh my goodness, person cursed. You can't walk down the street without hearing curses. But to engage in those values, it starts to climb. What values do you want to let climb into your neshama? Who do you want to be? And who you are is a question. And hopefully, good way of introducing ourselves, hopefully part of what you realize in this yeshiva, that room has 500 great role models. From the Rebbeim all the way on down to the boys who've been here 6 months or longer than you. And more than any books, the more time you spend, the more time you spend watching them, davening with them, talking to them, or just being in the same room and seeing people with passion and ideals and conviction and honor and responsibility and duty and national identity. Those are our values. I remember when I was your age, I was a big sports fan, and I came back from Israel, and I went to my first game, and one of the players hit a home run, and everyone around me got up and started screaming and cheering, and it just wasn't in me anymore. How could I get up and cheer for some guy in pajamas hitting a ball over a wall with a bat? I was so far into where I'd been for 2 years. My heroes were now Rav Aaron. My heroes were now the Rav. My heroes are now the Rambam. Well, it's okay. We don't vilify people. It's not like there's anything wrong. Remember, a lot of people, in order not to identify, they criminalize, they vilify, they demonize. And that's not our yeshiva. There's nothing demonic about sports. There's nothing terrible about it. But for some people, life is binary. Either it's something I engage in total or it's something that I villainize. And there's a middle stage where you enjoy it, but it just isn't you. It doesn't capture you. So that's the first thing to think about. Hopefully, by the time this is all over, you'll go back to Johannesburg and you'll watch the cricket match, but you'll watch it without looking at these people as representative of the life you're leading. Taking a few steps back. Number one. Number two. I'll never forget this conversation I had with an educator. I said, why do you feed them so much sports and Super Bowl parties and sports events? And he said, well, I'd rather they be obsessed with sports than some of the other addictions that are in our world. I thought about it a little. And I'm not in any way saying that it never stopped bothering me, that statement. The answer is no. Obsession and addiction in whatever way, shape, or form it experienced. Now, he asked me, if I had a choice, I would put a gun to my head and force the pill down my throat that would make me an addict. I'd rather become a sports addict than a drug addict or a fury addict or a sex addict or a gambling addict. But no one's putting a gun to your head. And obsession is giving up free will. And obsession is giving up your brain power. And obsession, and can you watch sports? Don't turn over the page then. Can you watch sports without obsession? And because it's so prevalent and so ubiquitous, how many times do you want to see the same play? That's obsession. You enjoy the play, you want to see it once. Maybe you enjoy it so much, you want to see it again to appreciate it from a different angle. When you find yourself watching the play again and again, and you're not gaining anything, even though watching sports is relative to how much you can gain from books, knowledge, and reading is very, very limited. Okay, but at least you're gaining entertainment. But it just drags you in and it addicts you to more. It makes you, it's like any other addiction. It stimulates the need for more. And you're constantly looking for the next highlight and the next. And those of you who are legitimately struggling with sexual addictions or with other forms, you know what it's like. We're always looking to push the bar forward. And what you've seen already is not enough. And once you give up control, once you lose your self-discipline, it's contagious. You're going to give up self-control in other areas, whether it's addiction or not. And at some point in your life, a religious person or just a morally noble person has to decide, I am controlling my habits. I am controlling my schedule. I am controlling my eating. I am controlling my sleeping, rather than being drawn by forces that you just admit to. Now, that's not an all or nothing proposition. Nothing, oh, you snap your fingers. It's a lifelong process. There's still parts of my life that I'm trying to get more control over. that I feel I'm not as in control. So it's not all or nothing, you flip the switch. But are you authoring your life and making decisions and setting your schedule and getting up? And half the guys who can't make it to, I mean, we know this. We try to do it gingerly. Half, if not more, of the boys who don't make it to Shabbos or to Shiur on time, it's because there's an addiction. Normally, internet addiction, phone addiction, they're staying up to 2 or 3. And it's sad because they would like to be in more control. And when we speak with them about it, they break down. It's really sad not to be in control of your life. So nip it at the bud. It's not just going to stop at sports. It's a gateway. Either you're in control and say, I watched the game, I enjoyed it, maybe I read an article about it, maybe. But to sit there combing statistics and comparing statistics and imagining, that's where you know you're in a rabbit hole. That's where you know it's grabbed you and you can't get enough and you need to get more. And that feeling, I can't stop it, I need more, I need more, I need more, it's going to rear its head in other areas of your life. So you're either in control of your appetite and serving your appetite in a healthy way, or you're not in control. And justifying sports obsession and sports addiction. Hi, Ben. Sit down. Tell them the rules, Gabby. Okay? Battling sports addiction means getting control. Number 3. Here's the biggest, if you can believe it. It's not just about identification and addiction. It's about you and the culture. It's not just a game. Okay, I ask you to pick the cup up. We don't like cups on the ground. It's not just a game. The Super Bowl is a cultural event. And you know why it's a cultural event, and I know why it's a cultural event, because the commercials are more important than the game. The advertisements, and the frenzy, and the pre-party, and the post-party, and there are millions of people, and it's must-see, and everyone's doing it, I must be there with them. Sports is a way for the modern culture, which has become economically weaponized and capitalized because they want to sell you things and hawk things. That's what drives the economy. Sports is a way to capture you and to make you do things without thinking. And when you do things without thinking, then you abdicate free will. Let me give you an example, okay? You guys probably won't know what I'm talking about. I apologize. The Americans will fill you in, okay? I understand what it is to follow a sports team. I follow sports. A lot of drama, injuries, teammates, trades, person gets sick, accidents, whatever. There's a lot of human drama involved. And again, you can get more from opening up any random book of Shakespeare and reading 2 pages and following the team for a whole season, but whatever. It's easier, it's lighter, it's more refreshing. Fine. I understand you're a fan and you follow the team, and therefore you're immersed, hopefully, by watching those first 2 criteria that I gave. But you know what happens every year in March? In the headquarters of CBS, which is a major American news sports organization, they've got a problem. What's the problem? The Super Bowl is over. Can't sell goods, can't attract viewers, can't sell advertisements. Basketball playoffs haven't really begun. Baseball, which is a big thing in America, they're just, so this is like a little 2-3 week gap where they don't have people's attention. People's attention, not gonna make money. Can't control their experiences for them. So there's one guy at CBS, and his name is M Squared. And they press the panic button. They say, M Squared, we need you, we need you. I've been sleeping the whole year, but dang it, now's my time. You know what my name is? My name is March Madness. I'm going to go press the button called March Madness, and now hundreds of millions of people are going to follow sports teams they never heard of. I challenge any of you to find, Americans now, Gonzaga on a map. It's not like you've been following the team the whole year. It's a very famous college basketball team. But all of a sudden, I care very deeply whether Gonzaga is going to beat Arizona State. You don't know where Gonzaga is. You don't know where Arizona State is. You haven't followed these players. You barely know their names. But if everyone's watching and there are office brackets and everyone's pooling their money, FOMO, I can't miss out, I have to follow the herd. Then Madison Avenue has your mind. Then you're not making independent decisions. Because you're just following what the culture tells you. Probably isn't even a Chabad in Gonzaga. Where's Gonzaga, Ohio or something?
Washington.
Washington State, right?
Yeah,
imagine there's even a Chabad there. Imagine a place so remote, there isn't even Chabad. You can check it tonight. There's a Chabad. Probably for all the mindless Jews who show up for March Madness, they're giving kosher food. So they probably have once a year they open up. That's the key. One of the dangers of being open to this world, if you live a Haredi lifestyle and you shut out the culture, you're not engaged in the culture whatsoever, that's one approach. But if you're going to engage in the culture, you have to keep your distance from it and engage in it autonomously, as an autonomous bystander, not as someone who receives their instructions mindlessly from the culture. Because once you submit that authorship and you listen to the culture, then it will take you to some very dark places. This is the key to the type of lifestyle you want to lead. You want to read? You want to go to a movie? Great, but can you do it at a distance? So I'm watching it. I'm a Ben Torah. I'm serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu. For whatever reason, I've decided to watch this movie. I'm going to take what I can, but I'm not going to be in the movie. I'm going to watch the sports, but not because anyone's forcing me, because I choose to. I'm going to take and call and what's what I'm looking for, and curate from the culture what I want, when I want it, on my terms. I'm not giving up my mind. And it's right at this point that the Super Bowl lies. Because it's not a game. It's a frenzy, and it's a six-hour pre, and everyone's making a party. And I think we've crossed that barrier a long time ago. I was part of it. I remember when I was a rabbi in the shul in America in 1992 or 1991, and I couldn't get people to learn, so I also had a Super Bowl party. And I remember during the halftime show, I took the clicker. It was his actual clicker for the TV, and I turned it off, and I said, now we'll have some Torah. And it was the Redskins versus the Bills, and I gave them a shiur who they should root for. And we talked about the fact that the Redskins were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so maybe you shouldn't root for Ovdei Avodah Zarah because there's an issue of Lo Techanim, because the ancient Native American Indians worshipped idols. And we talked a little bit about the fact that the Buffalo Bills were Bills as a buffalo, so I asked them a trick question. What would happen if one of the Bills got into an injury and his blood started spilling on the floor? Would there be a halach of Kisei Hadam? Because there's a halach of covering the blood of a chaya. So if one of the Buffalo Bills, who they're making believe they're buffaloes, what if their blood spilled? So a couple of them didn't ever hear of Kisui Adam. Those that heard said, yes, Rabbi, but it was a trick question, because that year, the game was being played on artificial turf. And there's only halacha of Kisui Adam if it's on the ground, not if it's on a kli. So that year, there was no halacha of Kisui Adam. And then that year, the coach of the Bills was Marv Levy. So I told him a little bit about Levium and how important Levium is, and the Rambam, the end of Shemitah Biyovo, how Levium are iconic for how we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I told about how Rav Aaron saw Levium. And then I talked about their quarterback. Their quarterback was Jim Kelly. So I said that in Kabbalah, if you make yourself into a kli, and you're just a vehicle for the transference of Hashem's hashkacha to this world, you've submitted your own ego to a larger divine narrative, and you are the... So they all loved it. And then in the second half, this guy Jim Kelly came out and threw a couple interceptions. But Baruch Hashem, in the first half, when he made bad plays, they were cursing him out. In the second half, when they made bad plays, they were saying, Kelly, you're a vehicle! Kelly, you're a utensil! So at least I got them to curse in the Lashon Nekiyah. They weren't saying terrible things. They were saying, you're a utensil! So evidently, my Kabbalah infused their curses. Kabbalah curses. But I don't know. At what point have we crossed that Rubicon in every shul and every school or Super Bowl parties with Torah, with Shiurim? What point should we have just said, no, we'll watch it at our own leisure, we'll watch it, but don't have to be part of the frenzy, part of the cultural event. Those are the three things to watch out for. Number one, identification with sports heroes. Number two, addiction. Number three, is this a vehicle for capturing your mind, and not addiction. Addiction means you know what you want, you're just helpless to choose it, right? You know. People who are addicted know they don't want to be. If I gave you a pill and broke your addiction, you would gladly take it. You feel bad about it, you're just powerless to save it. Cultural sway means you don't know that you want something else. You're just following the herd. You're not making independent decisions. If everyone's watching, I have to watch. This is a Super Bowl. Who am I if I'm not watching this big event? Okay, I'm going to put part three before part two. We'll talk about the Super Bowl on Sunday. Sometimes a picture is worth A picture is worth 1,000 words. So you have a choice. You can either listen to me, which you should generally do for the rest of your time in yeshiva, or look at what you'll become. I want to show you who you'll become, and believe me, you don't want to be anyone in this picture. This was taken about 25 years ago. It was from the New York Times. I obviously held on to it. Everyone is now welcome to turn over the picture and see the horror show that you can become. It may not seem that terrible, right? But let's take a closer look. At center stage is some high school dropout with a hoagie in his mouth and some champagne in his left hand. He's the object of everyone's admiration. What did he do in life? Yeah, not villainizing him, but nothing of any importance. Or at least this picture doesn't imply that. In self-cancer, he didn't give charity, he didn't stand for any values, he hit a ball, or he threw a ball with more velocity than other people. Nothing here speaks of. Just look at the responses. We'll go around the clock, starting from 9 o'clock. Okay, well, you can tell when this picture was taken. He's trying to decode his phone from like circa 2002, how to get a picture on. Okay. Gandhi, above him, like at 11 o'clock, is crushing this poor kid who obviously sneaked into the expensive seats because there's no way he could afford such a seat. He's crushing the guy with his arm, not even his thrilling arm, because his whole dream is, if I could just touch this person's hand, I'll never wash that hand again. Why would you want to touch the hand? Look at the eagerness. Look at the joy. What's it for? You want to be that person? Under Gandhi, tell me that guy hasn't had a few beers too many. He's already in some different planet. Of course, not as much as the guy next to him at 1 o'clock. Okay. Who clearly has been doused and roused a little bit. He's on a different planet. Okay. But my favorite guy, or my second favorite guy, is the guy around 2 o'clock. He is about 20 seconds away from heart failure. I mean, if someone doesn't bring an EMT to this guy, that's how amazed he is by the object of his admiration. He's literally having a hard time breathing. Someone's got to give him some oxygen tank. But my two favorite guys are the guys at 2 and 3 o'clock. I dare anyone here to tell me that these two guys aren't YU guys. Please. The glasses, the round faces, the caps that don't really make sense because, God forbid, you should wear a kippah in public, covering. Do you want to be any of these people in the scene? Do you identify with any of these people in the scene? Do you want that person at the bottom, without villainizing him, to elicit such emotions, heart attacks, touch me please? Why in the world? Okay, so you may not ever be in the scenes, you may not get those seats, but you will be in your living room feeling the same way. Unless you start to break that down. And I don't have any desire to in any way limit your sports watching. Well, limited, but if you leave this yeshiva and you enjoy sports in a healthy fashion, we and I have accomplished our goal. We're not trying to demonize it, we're not trying to eliminate it, but just don't identify so deeply, to become addicted to it. And don't follow the culture like a bunch of sheep just because the cultures tell you you have to see this, you have to be part of the celebration. So, for the Americans, and you guys don't really care, but for the Americans, what to do this Sunday, and for people listening. My advice to you is, here's my advice. We're not going to check up. I want to give you different tiers. Hardcore would say as follows. This is the year that I'm trying to create Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yemei Chayei. I say that 40 times on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when I recite the David Hashem Ori, and when I get to Shemayim, Hashem's going to say, well, you're a hypocrite, right? He says, Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yemei Chayei, and you stayed in my house 1 year or 2 years. And you'll tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, it was a hard world and had to earn a living, so I had to leave your house. Okay, Hashem says, I get it. Tell me about the experience when you were in my house. Did you at least focus in on being in my house? I said, well, I did, but then February 12th came, you know, I stayed up all night. And yeah, but Rebbe, I'm going to make up the time learning Monday after. If I had a dollar bill for every boy who said that, over the 35 years I've been teaching, I could retire and build my own yeshiva. At some point, you're going to have to make up the sleep. If you're going to stay up all night Sunday night to watch the game live, it's going to cut into your learning, into your avodah session at some point. Maybe not Monday, maybe not Tuesday. You're not going to be able to pull it off. Here's my challenge to you, okay? Here's the money shot of tonight's year. If you make that bold decision and you say, this is the one Super Bowl of my life, I am not going to watch in protest, on principle, I promise you, that will be the one you remember the longest. Because in Mirtz Hashem, you'll have a long life, and you watch many, many Super Bowls, and you'll start to forget what they were, because obviously. Let me tell you two stories. One about Rav Lichtenstein, one about myself. Rav Lichtenstein told me, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, that when Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, the current Rosh Yeshiva, got married, I was at the wedding, Rav Aaron was an Avel. Now, Rav Aaron is a super machmir in general, and he's a super machmir about Avelos. People don't go to Rav Aaron. He never went to Rav Aaron for a kul. And certainly not about Avelos. Well, if I serve the food at the wedding, can I go? And if I... No, you're an Avel. But Rav Aaron said, it's my son, and I want to go. So he asked Rishamo Zalman for a kula. And for some reason, it sounds like a joke, right? For some reason, I don't know what to say, but Rav Aaron decided he's not coming to the wedding. I think he maybe stood in the other room. The chuppah was out there. I think he stood in this room, something like that, some arrangement. So I asked him about it afterwards. And he told me the following. He said he remembers the love he felt for his son that night, having repressed the love more deeply than he would ever remember that love that he felt had he expressed it. Just because you don't express an emotion doesn't mean you don't remember it or feel it. Sometimes the irony is if you repress it, you feel it more deeply. Those of you who are a little bit literate, John Donne, Grecian Urn, a little bit, little tones of Grecian Urn, read their poems, it's an interesting poem. Well, here I was, 1981, a little bit younger than you, and I was watching the Super Bowl that everyone forgot, who even remembers who played, wasn't a famous Super Bowl. I was sitting in my living room watching the game, and 9 o'clock came. Whatever those days, the Super Bowl was earlier, and I think it was the Bengals or the 49ers are driving for the winning score. But it's now 9:02, and I got up, and I said, I got to go to Maariv. And people looked at me, Maariv? It's the Super Bowl. I said, no, but it's Maariv. I dragged my brothers with me to Maariv, and we dove in, and we came back, and I'll never forget that Super Bowl, because that's where I made my stand. That's why I determined something is going to be more important than sports. And I went. So this could be your year to accomplish all those shifts that I mentioned before. Will you tell yourself, this is my year in the Beis Hashem. For 1 year, I'm just going to cut away. That may be too harsh for you. If that's too harsh for you, then think about some of the other options. Just watch the highlights, 15, 20 minutes of highlights. You'll miss a few plays, but you'll enjoy seeing what happened in the game. If you really feel like you're such a football fan that you want to watch the whole game, so then watch it on recording. There are millions of ways to get recording. Just again to show you that we're not anti-sports. 15, 20 years ago, before there was ubiquitous internet, we actually recorded the Super Bowl and showed it the next day during the break here in Yeshiva. Because we wanted to convey the message that we're not against sports. It's just a question of prioritizing a year. So Monday, instead of going out and playing and relaxing, you can watch the game. We screened it in one of the rooms. It's very silly because you could watch it on your phone and your computer. It's no big deal. But once you start moving away from those three options, then you're in the danger zone. If you have to watch it live because everyone's watching it then, does that justify wrecking your schedule? If you have to go to a party, God forbid, is that really the best calibration for what you're trying to, for how you are during this year of Beis Hashem? So I'm trying to give you two or three options. No one's going to police you. I know the certain programs in Eretz Yisrael for Americans actually take them away on a T.O. for the weekend. So they control, they have a party, they watch it together. I understand for certain boys that's appropriate. I'm not in any way dismissing it or disparaging it. But I hope that you guys aren't there. And I hope that you're at the stage and at the level where you're able to make wise, tough decisions. And this is a tough decision, but those are the best ones. The best decisions are the tough ones. The ones that aren't easy and get you to some value that you wouldn't have had otherwise. You wouldn't have been able to achieve without that decision. So if you have to go to a party, I don't know that, again, if your parents are in town and they're inviting you for... I don't know that I feel comfortable with a boy who's been in yeshiva for 5 or 6 months at this stage with his value system, and Sunday night he's checking out for 4 or 5 hours to go to a party at the once again. Be honest, I'm not going to surveil you, but what does that say about you? If at this point you can't even shut that down, what does that say about you? I would recommend either not watching the highlights, or if you enjoy it, nothing wrong. You want to go back and watch the game. Again, if you watch it on delay, is there a chance that someone's going to tell you the score? Of course there is. Try your hardest. Ask your friends not to ruin it for you. Obviously, there'll be always be one friend who's going to ruin it for you. Okay, and then a week later, you'll forget about it. If you absolutely, positively must stay up, no one's going to be checking you in your room. I don't think that's a place you want to be If you make the decision that you enjoy it so much you can't give up this enjoyment, just understand the stakes. We're not here to get you not to watch the Super Bowl Sunday night. We're to take this as a learning opportunity about how to consume sports in our modern world and how to consume culture in our modern world without abdicating your freedom of choice and your identification with the values that are deeply, deeply important. I assume you guys can clip and paste some of this conversation to your own sporting events that I may not be aware of. Okay, guys? I'm actually going to be in Philadelphia on Sunday. One of the things playing in Philadelphia. I just tested some voice in Philadelphia. So I don't plan on watching it. I plan on just working and traveling. So I won't be able to ruin the score for you. Don't ruin it for me. I'm not going to watch it anyway. Okay, guys? Here's your chance. Okay? Who should you root for? Okay? That's always a question.
Who's he going to play?
I know that because I actually wrote up several articles before this. So you'll see it in this week's Torah Tidbits. A couple of weeks ago, I write all my articles weeks in advance, so no one should think that this is because I wrote about Yisrael and I wrote about the redemptive quality of the image of wings of eagles. You can read my article in Torah Tidbits this week and probably pays to vote for the eagles rather than the chiefs who, Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Indian chiefs. A couple of years ago, I was in L.A., so it was the Rams versus the... What? Rams versus the, who did they play a couple years ago? I was in L.A. when the Rams were playing. I was talking for Shabbos, so they all gathered who she root for. I gave them my Pesach Halacha. I told them why they should root for the Rams. I talked a little bit about Kedas Yitzchak, Ayel Acher Nechaz Basvach Dekarnav. And then I said, not only that, but I hold up the poster, because I had made a poster about my visit, Moshe Tarragon, Ram, Yeshivat Har Etzion. They spelled Ram, R-A-M. So I said, I guess we have to vote for the Rams. So they voted. Did they win that year? I think they won. Anyway, so this year I'm posketing to vote for the Eagles. The Eagles should win, but certainly you can watch it from afar. Okay, have a great 2 weeks, everyone. We'll get back to real Musa. Good luck with your acclimation to the Yeshiva.